Welcome to Phoning It In, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. With each broadcast, your hosts bring you the latest news and information from professional wrestling in Georgia and around the Southeast. And now, the GWH Radio Network presents Phoning It In with your hosts, Larry Goodman, Murder One, and Trent Van Dries.
Well, thank you, Robot Lady. We're back. Where have you been? It's June 13th, 2011. Phoning it in right here on the GWH Radio Network, of course, brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. And I am Trent Van Dries, the ever-dependable Trent Van Dries. And I'm not going to kayfabe you people. We were supposed to have a show last week. But I don't know. Maybe I'll just have the man himself explain it. A man that has seen at least one sunny day lately. Larry Goodman, are you there, Mr. Goodman?
Yes, I am here.
And I'm just going to tell these people right now that we were supposed to have a show last week, Larry, were we not?
We indeed were supposed to have a show last week.
And once again, you were supposed to deliver a woman, and once again, you did not.
It's definitely been a problem delivering the female guests on this show. But we will tonight. I promise you, we will tonight.
And what are you attempting to do tonight? We've only had one female on the show that I delivered. What do you have in store for these people tonight?
We will have a wrestling couple on tonight. We're going to be blessed with and graced by the presence of Tracy and Mike Taylor.
Yes. I'm looking
former WWE Deep South development talents, wrestle all over the Southeast. They've got some other stuff going on which they'll talk about. So I'm really looking forward to that, and I guarantee, you have my guarantee that this interview will take place.
Larry Goodman guarantee. Well,
I'm looking, actually, that should
be very interesting. Now, Tracy, I think, was supposed to be on our ill-fated Valentine's Day show. It was not her fault, and actually
no.
It was not your fault. Technical problems got the best of us that night.
Yeah, so, they sure did. And moving problems have gotten the best of our third part of this trio, Murder One. He's still, I think, in the process of getting himself together here. So hopefully he'll be getting himself straight, getting himself in the right frame of mind, so to speak, and be joining us here shortly.
Moving problems? Do you mean that he can't poop or that he didn't pay the rent?
Neither one. I really don't know the details.
Oh, you said he's moving.
He's moving. He's just moving. So he will be joining us as soon as he's able. But I thought we'd start out the show tonight with the pre-taped interview, moving right along, with the pre-taped interview I did with Paul Adams prior to the Showtime All-Star Wrestling Unfinished Business show Saturday night at the Gallatin Civic Center. And then we'll discuss afterwards. But this runs about 13 minutes, and he's got a few interesting things to say, I think. And how about if I go ahead and cue that up now?
Cool deal.
Okay. This is Larry Goodman with GWH Radio on location at the Gallatin Civic Center pre-show for the Showtime All-Star Wrestling Extravaganza Unfinished Business. I'm here with Paul Adams, the leader, fearless leader of the A-Team, creative genius.
I like that.
So tell us, Mr. Adams, what are your hopes and fears of leading in to tonight's event? And notice I did call it an event, not a show.
That's right. Talk to Reno Riggins about that. Well, I'm fearing the evening continuing to go the way the day has gone. We've had Tammy's flight was delayed about an hour or so. I was hoping to have her here in time for a 5:00 meet and greet, but that kind of went out the window. Luckily, it didn't seem like anybody was overly, not that they don't want to see her, but not upset the fact that she's late. So everything seems to be going good in there. And we've got a couple other delays that are causing some lineup changes, but nothing disastrous. So as long as, that's my only fear, is somebody breaking down or something along those lines. I think we got through the battles. Johnny Bandana just had a baby Bandana.
Whoa.
So his wife almost didn't let him out of the house tonight. She just got home today.
kind of your priority straight situation
right. And, you know, I felt like telling him on the phone, you know, why don't you just tell her to calm her her hormones down, you know? But I didn't think that would exactly get the results we were looking for.
Right.
So, and I thought about a bribe. But in the end, I think she, you know, realized it's a big kind of a culminating night for a year worth of Johnny Bandana tonight. So it was a big night for him. So thank God he will be here. So barring any other, you know, cancellations or that kind of people running too late, it's a 7 o'clock start, which at the Stadium Inn we do 8. You know, sometimes that with these guys, you know, leads to some problems. But so that's my fear, and then my hopes are that we get everybody home safe at the end of the night, of course. And we're going to do 3 hours of TV, maybe tape a little extra. Go for the fourth if we can, if we're rolling along pretty smooth. And then it's really going to be the culmination of a couple of different major angles. Built over about a year, some of them 3 years. I'll kind of give you a hint there, but so hopefully we can execute the next chapter in those pretty good, and put some real fire behind those, and then just, you know, top to bottom, have good matches, and like I said, get home safe. The thing with Tammy, bringing her in, she's going to referee the girls' match. And the goal behind that is sort of that we're going to be starting on this pay service, which is the world, what's it called, the Wrestling Network. Anarchy's on it and a bunch of other.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you,
TWN Worldwide.
Yeah. So we're going to be starting on that as a pay deal, like maybe 99 cents per episode, which hopefully, you know, people will find what we're doing worth a dollar a week to check out, if you can't see it on America One or wherever. And I thought, you know, having somebody like Tammy would be a good way to start. She's got her following, and hopefully 10,000 of them can give us a dollar the first week.
Wouldn't
hurt. Yeah, it'd be nice. So that was kind of the reasoning behind her, and her and I have been friends for, I was trying to figure it out with her the other day, I think probably 20 years, which...
Back to high school?
Yeah, I was in high school. She was probably just out of high school when we first met. Jersey kid.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's been kind of interesting. I was talking to somebody the other day about the space that you keep, you know, in relation to other people and kind of the world and the space that you occupy, and just some of the places her and I used to go down to Smoky Mountain, stay with her and Chris, and here we are. 15 years later, in Tennessee, which, you know, so interesting. But so I wanted to, I thought for us and for her, we could capitalize on her just doing the Hall of Fame thing, and then she can capitalize on, you know, hitting while the iron's hot, so to speak, with, you know, merch and the payoff and that kind of thing. So hopefully, both sides it works good, and so that's that.
Any thoughts on just curious, what kind of crowd you hoping for tonight?
I have no idea. Hoping, I'd like to do the same as last year, if we could, which was about 500 or 600.
Yeah, because this produced, as I recall, about the hottest TV you had all year long was out
they
here.
They were hot, too, yeah. This is a good town. You know, I'm sure they will be again. There's a lot of kids, a lot of families. So, it'll be, you know, whatever's here, I think, will be a good crowd, make good TV. And I'd be thrilled with the same thing, 500. I'd be happy with, you know, 2.
Mm-hmm.
It'll look good.
Good enough.
It'll look great with 2.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I noticed Mickey Knuckles not in the lineup.
She canceled off. She had a date that she took back in December that she forgot about, I guess, probably until somebody saw this, you know, the advertisement
right. This
week on
right.
Facebook or something and called out. And I've done the same thing. I've had somebody booked and all of a sudden seen them advertised on something and call up and, hey, you know, what's going on? And, I had this date I forgot about, you know, whatever. Or I forgot about yours, or, you know, so I understand that. And Miss Rachel, who is L.T. Falk. Better half, that's a good way to put it. you know, I was going to say baby's mama, you know.
Nah.
I'm trying to stay, you know, current with the, you know, you and I would say significant other.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Very,
so
very
I'm trying to stay current with the... Everybody's got a baby.
Trying to be poetic.
I feel like I'm the only one without a baby's mom. But anyway, I do have a significant other. or what do we say? Better half.
better half. You do.
Yeah. Amazingly enough, with the schedule. But so yeah, she's going to take her place. Which Mickey Knuckles is phenomenal, I think.
Yeah.
Her work's just, I mean, tremendous.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And she had a match like at that in Laverne there that you came. Were you there for that?
Yes. Yeah, so I love that match with her.
Oh,
and Steve
yeah. And you know, Jessie's green. You know, and she really carried it to on any level. You know, a good, it was a good match.
That's one of my favorite matches tonight. I've been able to see them in OVW where they've come in as a tag team there.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's Mother's Sisters.
Yes, Twisted Mother's Sisters, something along those lines.
Yeah.
Hey, just quickly on the, you know, I know you're doing the title tournament tonight, and the deal with Shatter was just a matter of, it just was no longer feasible to bring him in for
Yeah, it just became, not that either one of us didn't want to, and I think his thing for tonight got canceled. He had an indie date. I saw a thing on his Facebook that, he found out through another worker, not whoever he was working for. So it was one of those things. So, you know, it sucks because it's a week out and he could have been here. But at that point, I can't advertise him. So what, you know, it's just a bill that I can't take on at this point. Mm-hmm. I'd love to, you know, have him up. So, yeah, it just became a thing where it was, especially when he had the TV belt. I think they took it off him. But,
Touch pin by Eric Young.
Okay.
As best as I can remember from TNA, you know, I'm pretty cloudy on TNA these days.
Okay. Well, there's a lot of action, total nonstop action.
Yeah.
So it's hard to keep track.
It's actually Impact now, wrestling.
Impact, yes. So, I mean, it was just hard to get dates with him. You know, it just became. Yeah, you know, and it was a situation, we dealt with this with Mercer, too. You know, those guys have him under contract, and you can't show him on TV, which it's all right. I think they, you know, those guys draw. And which, you know, you put people in the seats, make sure TV look good, so there's a good reason for us to use them. But it just became a thing where last second they can get pulled at any time, too. Like tonight, luckily, you know, TNA's not, I think they're off until they've got a pay-per-view tomorrow. So, but a few weeks ago, the racetrack, Motor City Machine Guns got hurt, and they put Steiner and Mercer on the road. And that was literally like a week before, you know.
Yeah, and you're at their mercy on this stuff.
Right, you know, which is cool. I mean, we've gotten those guys, we get along good with those guys. Those guys have given, you know, I've asked for stuff to auction off, charity stuff. And they've gone above and beyond in terms of, you know, being cool and stuff like that. So, but it's just, you hate to advertise somebody for 3 weeks. And then you can't change it. You can't let anybody know TV's done, it's out. So it's safer that way for him. I mean, he's driving from Charlotte up to here, which is an ungodly drive anyway.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've told him how much I appreciate that because obviously he wants to be here. He's making that ride. He's not getting rich doing it. You know, he's just doing it out of love for what we're doing. And because he loves doing this. Crimson is another story. He lives here. So, you know, I feel like I can put him just on anything pretty much that. And if he cancels, okay. I don't, you know, I'm probably not going to advertise him a lot, but I like having him there, you know. I mean, good guy, good locker room guy to have around, so.
Any other breaking song news you'd care to release at this point, or I know we're going to talk again after the show.
No, and I mean, you know how we picked up a couple stages this week, but we don't ever release them, so, you know, I mean, we don't ever... really publicize where we're on.
I noticed America One's been moving, or at least the station I've been watching has been moving the timer.
Yeah, they've been bouncing it. I think in the summer that they, kids getting out of the pool.
The chlorine smell in here.
Yeah,
really,
oh, God. Some of these people, there's a little bit too much chlorine in their gene pools. During the summer, I know that station last year preempted us for a lot of stuff. Because they don't do a lot of local programming, but of all the America ones, they seem to do more than they do, like, because they're in the Hamptons and all that.
Yeah.
So they'll do, like, the boat show, the horse, you know, some equestrian stuff and things like that. So I know last summer, it might be a summer thing. You know,
for the uninitiated, we're talking about WBVH out of the Hamptons, which is sort of America One's flagship station, their number one.
Biggest. There's one in L.A. that's pretty strong, too, and they carry it. Not all of them carry you.
Yeah,
sort of at their discretion, but the LA, I think we have an independent station in LA that we got on our own that carries us, and then there's, I think the America One does carry us out there. So,
SAW saw its best kept secret on independent wrestling TV.
I mean, we don't publicize it, and I think that may change. You know, If that's a scoop, then that's a scoop. But I think we may get them up on our website now. It seems like people that we kind of felt might, because, there's people, in the wrestling business that sit around all day with nothing better to do but cause trouble for those that have something going on, because, like I said, they sit around all day with nothing going on. So there are people that will just, that it won't benefit them in any other way than to sit there and think they did something by negatively affecting us. And I don't think there's any way for them to do anything at this point.
Right.
At one point, I really fear, we've been on our CW station in Nashville 2 years. It'll be 2 years in August. We performed successfully for them. Some lunatics calling up and, who's saying whoever, who knows what, isn't going to affect us.
That does lead me to one last question. Are you going to be a lead-in for Ring of Honor, or
I don't know. Are they going to be on that station? Or
I don't know. That's
okay. I don't know. I haven't talked to them about it. I do know that we may move, and this isn't final yet, but we may move to Sunday nights when the new season comes around.
Okay.
Probably September. And usually that's just that the network is requiring them to carry something. So I think, when we originally got that time slot on that station, their idea was to, they did us, and then they did an MMA show after us, a local MMA show.
Right.
So that was the program director's idea in the first place, was to do like a testosterone Saturday night, guys night type thing. I think I don't think Ring of Honor would affect us. I think we'd either wind up being a lead-in for them, or they'd be a lead-in for us.
Yeah, the only reason I ask is 9 o'clock Saturday night had been thrown out as a possible time
for
them. Yeah,
And I think if they were going to be on that station, I think we'd be bumped up against them somehow, since that was...
Thank you.
Since their idea, that was their idea in the first place.
Okay.
So I'm thinking it's probably more, some sort of network show that they're trying to get the affiliates to pick up, or just some, something that the guy wants to try. Try us on Saturday night or on Sunday night. So.
Okay. Well, good luck with the show, and we'll talk afterwards. And see how it came out.
All right.
Thanks.
All right. Good luck to us.
Well, there you have it. Mr. Van Dries, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Who are these people that are sitting around all day doing nothing, looking to knock saw?
I thought you might ask that question.
I'm asking that question.
I'll let you conjecture about that.
What would these people do exactly? Would they watch the show, and what would they do from there?
They would. The reference here is to others who might be hunting for TV stations to do barter deals with to get their show on, that might like to try to steal some of Saw stations, and that's why no list of Saw stations has ever been released.
Very interesting. Very interesting indeed.
Yeah, as was, I thought, the possibility of them moving to Sunday nights in the fall season.
I don't think Adams, and by the way, I enjoyed it. It was interesting. I really did. I don't think Adams would give you a specific answer, but I am really curious as to what kind of numbers they are doing in Nashville on Saturday nights, ratings-wise. If they know, I guess they do. That station does track ratings, I'm sure.
Yeah. At one time, I tried to look into it and didn't have any success, but that's... as far as just asking the station directly, but I wasn't able to get anywhere with that. But yeah, I'm curious to know the same thing. Well, how they actually do, what kind of rating they're doing.
Yeah, but they've been on TV for a while now in a Saturday night time slot, so I'm going to guess that they're in line with what that station does on Saturday night. I would figure. That would be a pretty reasonable conclusion, I would think. So.
Well, and as I noted in the show report. Clearly, when Cody Melton came out, when they did the Melton bandana match, if the people weren't watching TV, they would not have gotten the significance of all that, and they got it. So clearly, those the people that came were watching the TV show.
And the other side of that coin, which really surprised me, and no knock on him, but a local guy, Matt Corbain, who's out of Gallatin and worked there for years, very little reaction, which I figured he felt like that would get a big reaction in his hometown, you would think. So apparently the crowd that was I guess it's mostly a local crowd there, wouldn't you think, in that area? Or would you say it's kind of more of a national crowd? What would you think?
I don't really have a read on that as far as where those people came from.
Yeah.
But But the only read through I would make is that based on the way the lack of reaction to him suggested that it was not a crowd that attended local indies.
Yeah. I'm glad Cody Melton's getting a push because, man, to me he's one of the better young talents around in that area. I honestly think he's got a little. There's something about that guy that. I'm going to use the word Larry. To me, he's got a little bit of that it factor going on. You know what I'm saying?
I guess you haven't seen the injury where King cracks him across the face and knocks him out. I mean, it's compelling. I mean, it was a legit thing, and it's compelling footage. I mean, the guy is clearly out of it for the rest of the match. And, you know, we talked about it in the post-show interview. The story they made out of that was better than anything they had planned. And really, the culmination of that, which was on TV that aired on America One last week, where Melton beats King, was the best thing they've done since they started running the stadium in this year. As far as how it came across on television.
Why did King do that? I mean, Melton and King they're from the same area. They know each other real well. It was an accidental shot.
I mean, he set him up on the turnbuckle and was going to slap him across the face, but apparently the way he caught him. He just knocked him out.
Wow.
And then threw him out of the ring and got a separated shoulder.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean it was nasty.
Jeez.
And it was clear on TV that he was hurt bad. It turned into a great story.
I mean, to me Melton is a comer and it's good they're giving him a push. I mean, I think they were a little slow giving him a push initially, you know, but I'm glad that they saw the light because you look at the guy, it's like, geez, do something with this kid, for God's sakes, you know. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say the high point of the show was the Chase Stevens-Tommy Mercer match and the brawl afterwards, which was really, you know, everything you could ask from a pull-apart brawl in terms of people going crazy for it and being truly upset that they weren't going to get the match continued. And just booing the hell out of Reno Riggins for not keeping the match going.
I love that part. Reno got booed. And that's really the reaction you want in that case. It just shows how bad the fans want it. And from what you read there, there's pull aparts are commonplace in wrestling, but there's good ones and bad ones. And this sounded like a fairly exceptional one. And with the crowd reaction, that should make for good television.
Well, of course, they won't be able to air it.
Oh crap! Forgot about that.
Yeah, they won't be able to hear it. But the whole point of that
man
was
man. You just made me go limp. Go ahead.
The point though was to set it up to draw in September when they come back to put him in a cage.
Right. Now, do you think and they may do fine in September. Now, do you think the fans can remember from May to September? I mean, can they or what's your take on that?
Well, I mean. I'd like to think that the way that played out and that the match was made in the middle of the ring at the end of the show with Reno making the announcement at the very end of the show will help stamp it in people's minds that they're going to get to see that match if they come back. I think the only thing I guess I would say they did everything possible to make that match draw in September.
Right.
Whether it will or not, you know, we'll see. But giving him that and giving him Cash and Reno, who also had quite a nice pull apart with Cash getting his nose bloodied and getting in Michael Graham's face like big time, really it was pretty wild stuff. All of that.
Yeah, and Mr. Riggins getting into the ring. Well, who called this like 2 years ago?
Yeah, TVD.
I called it. I mean, I wasn't on the cutting edge, and I don't know that it was the plan then or not, but it sure seemed like the plan back then. You know?
Yeah.
So I don't know that they. I don't know what made him finally pull the trigger on that now after all this time. There's one thing about the Saw stories, like they forget about some stories and some they come back to and some are, you talk about slow cooking the crock pot, buddy.
Well, I believe this is a slow crock pot story that is absolutely where they wanted to go all along. I believe it's one of those. The other interesting thing was the decision on putting the belt back on Cash and making him a three-time champion. That wasn't decided until sometime in the week leading to the show. That Cash was going to go over in the tournament, and the feeling was that was going to be the best going forward for the storyline with Reno and Cash to do it that way.
Well, the thing is, I mean, they've had trouble with the belt, you know, with the belt on Shatter, you know, it's the better part of this year they haven't even had a champion on TV.
Right.
After a while, it's just, you know, why do you have a champion? You can use him on an occasional show when he has a little name value, and the guy's on national TV right now. I get all that, but when you can't use it on television, boy, that's for half a year, that's quite an issue, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, so. The other thing was there was something apparently posted on Cash's Facebook page or something that's purported to be Cash's Facebook page about him going to TNA this week. And I don't know if
really?
It's the truth or not, but I asked Adams about it after the show,
wow.
and he knew nothing about it and said, oh, great, you know, if that's really true, here we go again. But, again, I didn't get to talk to Cash. I do not know if that's true.
Well, I mean, and let me put you on the spot here a little bit, Larry. It's like I posted on the board. I mean, do you think that Saw has kept the same just couple guys on top too long and not shuffled it around, and now that they put the belt back on Cash, it's kind of going – you know, right back where they've been, and the whole thing with the stolen tapes and stolen merchandise that happened to them in Columbia, they took a shoot situation and made an angle out of it, and Cash is like, well, I'm looking for the crook, and now Cash is the crook. I guess, do you think that paid off, and like I said, do you think that they kept the same guys on top too long, and now do you think putting it back on Cash is going forward or just kind of, you know, going back to the status quo?
Well, I look at it this way. One, I think that did play out well with Cash revealing himself to be the thief. And two, I do think they need other guys on top, but given the way things are right now, that Cash is the best choice to carry the title. I do think they need other guys to compete for the title. And I don't know that, you know, they've been doing the Chris Michaels storyline where this is his quest to, you know, but I, you know, but even if he gets it, he's not a longer term answer as a champion. So I do think they need other guys on top to compete. I hope, and I'm not saying this is sort of a random aside, and I'm not saying he's a championship level guy. I hope they keep using Daniel Wheeler, or that Daniel Wheeler is willing to keep coming up, who's also known as Steven Walters in NWA Anarchy, part of the New Wave team. Jeremiah Plunkett put him over huge as far as the match they had, and it was a very good match. The guy's a really good wrestler. So, I mean, that's the kind of talent that would help their roster. And it's not, as I said, it's not like they have a bad roster. They got a lot of guys that look like major league size and look
yeah.
type guys that you don't see in a lot of, you know, comparing it to Rampage, that's an area where Saw clearly has the edge. And, you know, Rampage has a lot of very small guys. Not very good workers, but small guys.
Now you say you like the way this Cash thing played out. Now,
yeah.
Cash saying he's on the case and kind of being not really a good guy, but, you know, kind of a hard-ass, hard-nosed type babyface role. But doesn't the whole thing make, you know, storyline-wise, doesn't it make the Saw management look like ninnies and the roster look like ninnies and the fans that cheered Cash for the short time? Doesn't it make everybody just look dumb? Everybody?
Well, I guess that's one way of looking at it. I look at it like it just puts more heat on Cash. No, to me, it just puts more heat on Cash in the long run. He
really?
Faked everybody out, and he's still a complete jerk, just like he always was. He calls Reno a moron. He gets to rub it in more that he's the champion once again, and the superior guy. No, I like it.
But the angle had nothing to do with him actually getting the belt back, though. Is there a connection there with him actually getting the title back? Because he could have been a jerk and got back in the mix, I guess.
True. I guess it just amplifies it.
Yeah, and,
hey,
you know, and as far as being a heel, I mean, God knows Kid Cash is about as abrasive as they come.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Hey, I want switching quickly. You had posted on your board about the shitty review that Tommy Mercer got
yeah.
at the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
And, wow. I mean, they laid into him.
Yeah, I'm talking about last night's TNA Slammiversary, and I was listening today. I'm a podcast whore, everybody. I'm a big whore for podcasts, for sure. And, yeah, I just listened to the Observer Radio with Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez, and they were running down the Slammiversary pay-per-view, and running down would be the correct terminology. They liked a couple things on the show, but, yeah, they spent quite a bit of time speaking of the Crimson Tommy Mercer versus Samoa Joe match, and leading up to it, Meltzer had basically said, you know, this was basically, in his mind, Crimson's chance to sink or swim and show what he can do and show that if he belongs. And following the match, both he and Alvarez made no bones about it. Now, they did say that Samoa Joe was bad in the match and he's lost some of his mobility and lost his ability to care. And basically, Meltzer even said Samoa Joe kind of looks like a guy that needs to leave the territory and go somewhere else, if there was somewhere else to go, of course. But said basically, they said that Mercer was too green for the push. They said he couldn't punch. They said he couldn't take a dragon screw leg whip. They said he couldn't run the ropes. And I was listening, I was like, oh, my God. I mean, they just said the guy was not ready for anything more than like a three-minute match. And then, like, I read your review with Chase, good match, great pull-apart. Now, I don't watch TNA on a regular, or Impact Wrestling, excuse me, on a regular basis, but the times that I've seen Mercer there, you know, in short matches, I think he's actually carried himself pretty well and looked pretty good. I haven't seen a couple of the spots. I think he does some real complicated spots on TV sometimes that kind of lend themselves to, you know, just real complicated spots. But overall, I think he's looked okay on TV. What's your take on that? Because these guys were, you know, not kind to Mr. Mercer.
I agree that in the short TV matches that he's looked okay to me. And I don't know if Chase Stevens is a miracle worker or what, but I think this is the third match that I've seen them do that went. This one was a little shorter. I've actually seen them go in the 15 to 18 minute range and thought they had fine matches. So, he doesn't throw the world's greatest punches, but they're not horrible looking or anything. I don't know. I wish I would have seen the match last night to know what they're talking about.
Yeah, well, I didn't see it, of course, but I'm not buying that stuff. But the thing is, you know, it could be said, you know, that Samoa Joe doesn't care, doesn't want to be there, maybe wasn't even crazy about doing a job. Maybe he wasn't. That you could speculate all that, but when you see a guy can't run ropes, that's a different subject. You know what I mean? That's not saying, you know, you could go in there and try to make a guy look good, but you give a guy an Irish Whip, he can either run the ropes or not. He can either punch or he can't, you know. That goes beyond trying to carry somebody, but
what Jeff Daniels would say about hearing is that his training Tommy Mercer can't even run the ropes and can't throw a punch.
Oh, I'm sure it's going to go over like a fart in a church, you know. But you know, and the thing is, what's interesting is we won't know until the coming weeks if. You know, of course, you never know what TNA's thinking internally. That's a quagmire of worms and pigs. You know what I mean? Nobody knows, but it's hard to tell if eternally if they were disappointed in him or if the push is going to continue. That'll be an interesting thing. If internally anybody thought that too, I mean, I don't know what you know where he goes from here. But then again, it could be that this is a guy we're going to push. And I also read, like, in the coming months, another one they're going to push is Shatter. You know what I mean? He's on there. They're hit list right now.
Well, they won't go wrong there. If you've seen his stuff on the show, I mean, the guy's got it in the ring. I mean, they won't be going wrong by pushing Shatter. Now, you know, at least to their credit, they dropped the Chris Harris thing. But on the other side, that they did it in the first place was stupid.
The Chris Harris thing, yeah. The thing is, Chris Harris was hanging out down there a while trying to get back in. I was halfway surprised. He got back, but then wrestling's wrestling. But then it's like, my God, you know, if you get a chance to come back, you need to deliver, you know.
Yeah.
This guy, you can just tell from TV, just him standing with that pumpkin head, that he just wasn't ready. You could see it in him that he wasn't ready. You could see it in his eyes. You could see it. It just exuded from him, you know. And I used to really
like preaching to the choir. Yeah, you're preaching to the choir
on
that one.
I'll tell you what's interesting about TNA or Impact. I don't even think they know what the hell to call it, too. But I've been.
I got another name for it, but let's move on.
Yeah, but I don't think they know what to call it. I honestly don't think they know. And I hate to have a TNA discussion, not really a TNA discussion necessarily, but Ohio Valley Wrestling, lowrider Matt Barella is there working now with Hernandez's Anarchia. I always thought the guy had a hell of a look, and, you know, his talking was too much of an Eddie Guerrero and Stone Cold impression, but the guy could talk. And. But I've been pleasantly surprised with his ring work in TNA because in OVW, I'm telling you, he was not at the top of the OVW pecking order list work-wise. I mean, he was one of their top guys, but work-wise, he, you know, not the best worker there. But I think in TNA, in these short matches, I guess they're brawling kind of matches, he looked okay. And last Thursday, I actually had it on, and Anarchia in the office going nose-to-nose on the mic with Hulk Hogan. I'm going, holy Christ, go boy. And I thought he did good.
I don't know what's up tonight, but I'm going to have to be in complete agreement with you again. I've been pleasantly surprised, as you have, with his performances there, both in the ring and out. Yeah.
Yeah.
He looked like he belongs.
And the thing is, Hernandez is not known as a great talker, so, you know, and I'm sure, I no problem saying this, I'm sure that he got into TNA through Al Snow. Al Snow's an agent at TNA, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that's how he got in and got his chance, and I don't know, and you might not know either. Is he actually a contracted talent there at this point? I was thinking he wasn't, but then here
I'm
lately,
going to assume that he's under the same type of contract that Shatter and Mercer have, but I don't know.
Yeah.
But he's
a guy that's delivering. You know, you got to give it to him. He's got a shot, and to me, he's kind of making the most of it. You know, you got to say he's doing a good job. So.
Hey, moving on to a couple of quick Georgia notes here. Outfit called Mid-Georgia Championship Wrestling ran their big show of the year in War Games this weekend.
Wow.
Brought in Billy Gunn. And Jesse James had the New Age Outlaws, and they put them in the War Games. Drew almost 400 paid. Also had, you'll love this, a Curtis Hughes-Tommy Rich match on the card.
Oh my God! How long did it go?
I have no clue on this.
2 minutes.
But they did. I didn't get any details on the match. But they the War Games ended with the promoter of Platinum Championship Wrestling subbing for Rick Michaels in the on the heel side in the War Games because they had done an angle between the two promotions, getting tapped out by the big Mid Georgia Championship Wrestling star Andy Anderson, who has sort of like a Sting look. And Platinum tapped out to him in the War Games. But they were very happy to draw close to 400 people there. The other thing was Georgia Championship Wrestling, or the revived Georgia Championship Wrestling, debuted Saturday night in America's Georgia. And they did about 150 paid, as I understand, and apparently pretty good show. Not a lot of names of note. Actually, that's where Vordell Walker wound up working instead of being at Saw. I don't know who he was first.
Okay.
But that's
okay.
Where he was. Well, certainly a lot shorter drive for Vordell to go to America's from Savannah than all the way to Nashville. And they also had the Outlaw. Joel Deaton was on top on that card. So next Monday night we'll have Grady Odom, who's the promoter owner of Georgia Championship Wrestling, will be one of our guests. So we'll hear about their upcoming plans because they're going to be running shows on a regular basis.
So when was does Platinum wrestle at all for his promotion, and when was the last time he actually wrestled, do you know?
He told me he hadn't wrestled a real match in a number of years. The only thing he's done at his own promotion is they have an ongoing gimmick there of masked jobber guys called the War Horses.
Oh, you've been one of them?
And he's been a War Horseman. But as far as other than that, he had...
A War Horseman?
Yes, the War Horseman.
Let me ask you, this Platinum thing, I read some of these show reports, and is this like a loose southern version of Chikara or something, some of that stuff? Is that what it kind of is in a way? Or
It's sort of like a theatrical, but it's gotten a lot more like a traditional wrestling show, at least at the Masquerade, the last few times I've been there. It's been a lot more, and I've thoroughly enjoyed the last couple of shows I've gone to there. But originally, yes, it was very theatrical and a lot of really crappy wrestlers, actually, or non-wrestlers posing as wrestlers, but it's really improved.
I just want to say real quick about Rick Michaels.
Yep.
Did you hear the interview we did with Dave Wills, I think 2 weeks ago on Tuesday night right here on the GWH Radio Network, the Dave and Danger Show? He had Mr. Michaels on as a guest.
I have not heard it, no.
You know, and it was a good interview, and I've always liked Rick Michaels' work, but far be it for me to say anything controversial, okay, Larry? But I'm not overly homophobic, but I got a little tired of him talking about his boyfriend. Oh, sweetheart, you turned out the light. I can't read the card. Turn the light on, sweetheart. This kind of shit.
Oh, as the interview was going on?
Yes, yes, yes.
Oh, wow.
And
I'll have to check that out. No,
I'll tell you right now, it is Rick Michaels or something else. Turn on the light, sweetheart. I can't see.
Well, you know, he was in America's, too. Instead of being at Platinum, he was on the America's show for in Georgia Championship Wrestling. So I don't know how that worked. Because he was supposed to be in with the Simon Sermon in the War Games for that Mid Georgia Championship Wrestling show.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I'm glad the guy is what he is, and I hope he's happy. But some of that I could have lived without. Okay, that's all I'm saying. So.
One other Georgia note: Michael Judas made his return to Georgia wrestling. I guess you may have seen as Jeff G. Bailey's surprise in Cornelius Saturday night, and apparently he is not being used by TNA at this point. And may be back for future appearances at Anarchy.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
There had been a rumor going around that he was going to be let go by TNA as far as having the same kind of contract like Shatter did. And I don't know anything about that status, but it's interesting that he came back to Anarchy, and as I understand it, that what he did there will be used on television.
Well, it lets you know right there what's going on, you know.
Unless they just sort of made some sort of, arrangement, which is possible.
Yeah, it's possible, but I think it lets you know right now he's probably on a hiatus at TNA. It would just be a guess, you know. So. Huh. Of course, up here in Louisville this past Saturday night, I actually had a rare Saturday off, so I checked out Ohio Valley Wrestling Saturday night special with the Davis Arena. They had to get a little creative with this card because their core crew is actually, I don't know if they're coming back now, they were actually on tour in Australia. They went down for a show in Australia. Mike Mondo, Jamin Olivencia, Muhammad Ali Baez, Rudy Switchblade, all these guys got to go to Australia, which I think is very cool, but it left things a little thin here at the home front. And it wasn't much of a show, except for the main event, which saw Nightmare Danny Davis come out of retirement and wrestle as part of an 8-man tag, along with Al Snow and Cliff Compton and rookie Jason Lane. And, Danny Davis, my God, you know, you watch these old-time workers and you realize real quick how much has been lost over the years as far as, you know, what it really means to be a worker. It's just so lost, you know. And Cliff Compton, no fanfare was made of it, but apparently Saturday night was his final match in Ohio Valley Wrestling. I don't know if he's retiring from wrestling or going somewhere else. I haven't heard, but he's done there for now.
Hmm.
I don't know, you know, I don't know. I just know that he's done there. And also along the same lines, I would like to mention that addition to Grady Odom, next Monday the 20th, speaking of OVW, Muhammad Ali Vaez will be here on the show as a guest, so I'm really looking forward to that. Actually, he's got an interesting background. The guy's a great talker and a fine talent and should be a great interview. But I will tell you one thing about OVW, Larry.
One thing
I've learned as I'm going along. How can I word it to you? They don't come from the Tony Falk school of wrestling attendance figures. Okay? Again, another.
I get your drift.
I won't say who it was, but just like when Paradise was on the air, busting my balls, saying that one of those TV tapings had 200 at it, you know, I received an anonymous email claiming that there was almost 200, you know, at the Saturday Night Special. I'm telling you, I went to the Larry Goodman School of Head Counting.
Mm-hmm.
There was over 100. There might have been 120. At the most, but there was not almost 200 people there. I mean,
right.
Come on.
Right. You didn't miscount by 75, 80 people.
And it was even put to me like, you know, why not just say close to 200 to, you know, because it's hard to get fans, you know, instead of saying over 100, why not say almost 200? Why not going to do that?
Why not lie?
I mean, it's just, you know, and they've, the promotion's doing good right now. I mean, they're on, you know, like I said, their core guys are overseas and coming back. But when they get them back, they got a lot of momentum, a lot of interesting things going on, and their attendance has gone up in recent months. And I mean, I wish they had 500 every show, but some of this stuff, I mean, I guess it's just wrestling, but some of these guys just kill me. They just kill me.
Hey, I just got a message from Dan Masters that I don't know where I got that idea from that Bordell was in Americas, but I stand corrected. He was not. He was not on that Americas card. So my apologies to Mr. Walker about stating that. Not there.
Now,
Pardon?
Was Dan Masters at Gallatin?
Dan Masters was in Americas, and he's joining us right now. Mr. Masters, thanks for the correction on Vordell being in Americas. I don't know where I
got
that.
No problem. You know, God, Jesus, Vince McMahon, all know that Larry Goodman's even wrong at some point in time, and this would be one of those situations. So.
Yes.
Yeah, I unfortunately wasn't. My flight information didn't make it on time for me to get to Gallatin from Savannah International Airport.
I see.
I was receiving text messages from Mr. Reno Riggins, and he swore that the plane ticket was there, but the lady at the counter says no. So I was in a situation. I was told that if I paid for my flight, they would reimburse me when I got there. I didn't have the money on me, and my debit card wasn't going through. So,
wow, what a shame. So you and Sonny both had those flight problems, huh?
That we did, yeah. We were actually joking about that on Skype all day long, she and I. But nonetheless, made the trip in the car to Americas, Georgia for Georgia Championship Wrestling. 150 is a legit, accurate number. The other thing I think you may have said, did you say Rick Michaels was there? He wasn't there also. That was a mislead you got there. Maybe one of your anonymous moles in the streets are feeding you some inaccurate information.
Well, actually, that came from a company source.
That
results from a it results from a company source.
If he was there, he must have been in drag because I didn't see him.
It's possible.
You said
if
it, not me.
If you're hearing Michael talk the other week, it's possible.
You know what? I got two different sets of results here. One lists him, one doesn't.
Oh, he was actually in the results. Who did he work with?
awesome. Okay, he was listed as Rick Michaels defeats Danny Horn and Tommy Lee in a three-way.
No. That was
right.
The Cosmic Hammer, also known as Gringo Pantera. So, hey, he kind of looks like Rick Michaels, I guess, in a way, but no.
All right. Well, so two mistakes on that card tonight.
That's all right. So, hey, one of the guys actually did look like Wardell. I wore a pair of his old tights, I think. CJ Awesome, I saw him for the first time. He's a pretty talented guy. Maybe that was the mix-up on the Wardell Walker front. But, no, we did have a great group of talented guys there. And what I really liked is when the fans came up to me after the event and thanked myself, and I immediately sent them over to Grady because they were all asking about a return date. And everyone knows it's hard to get people out to the matches these days, but especially certain ethnicities, certain groups of people, it's hard to pull them into the arenas. And we had a great mix of white, black, yellow, green, everybody there seemed to enjoy themselves. So it was pretty cool.
Cool. Well, thanks for calling in. We'll talk more, of course, next Monday night when we have Grady on. We'll get a little more scoop on what's going on with the restart of Georgia Championship Wrestling.
So just going out of this thing, you can tell your little mole that no good little prick, Nigel Jarrett. This thing's not over. I'll see him in Americas next time. I'll see him in Columbus, Phoenix City. I'll see him in Macon. He hadn't run me away from Georgia Championship Wrestling. I'm there. I'm there to stay. I've been blackballed before, but this time. So that little prick, that little as seen on TV know-it-all, you can't get me out of there. I'm not backing down from you, pal.
Wow.
I thought you guys were going to be the announce team.
I think that's your little mole, Larry. You know, I finally found out who's giving you all this information over the years.
Oh,
back at the D-Shop days when it was on the internet all the time. Who was tipping off Larry Goodman to the backstage politics? Now we know.
Nigel Sherrill.
Okay, well, stay tuned. We'll hear more about that next week. I'm guessing.
Love you guys. See ya.
See ya.
Wow, what a can of worms that is. Well, Larry, who would you pick in the shoot, Nigel or a Dan?
I'd have to go with Nigel.
I don't know. I'd have to go with Dan. I think Dan's pretty devious, man. He's pretty devious.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, be that as it may, we're joined now by former WWE development talents and they wrestle all over the Southeast, all over Georgia. We're very pleased to have with us at this point Mike and Tracy Taylor. Welcome to Phoning It In.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me, Larry. How you guys doing?
Good.
Yeah, how
good.
You doing, Mike?
Hey, man. What's going on?
I want to know who you'd pick in the shoot, Dan Masters or Nigel Sherrod?
I don't know. Aren't they both your guys' moles? Don't they both give a little stooge report to everybody? That's a hard one to pick, man.
Wow.
I'm going to go with they're both equally not talented.
Wow.
They should stick the ring announcing. No, I'm just kidding, man. I don't know who to pick on that one. I think that'd be funny, though. I'd love to see it. I'd pay to see it. Put some boxing gloves on them and let them go.
Yeah. Well, you might have to attend a Georgia Championship Wrestling show to see it, but... hey, is Tracy with you also, or is she calling separate?
She's with me right now. She's in the room right now. Do you want her to call in separate?
Whichever's going to work. I've got plenty of lines, so that's fine.
All right, I'll have her call you right now. Hold on one second.
Okay, great.
You saw that number on that paper? 347 number? Okay, she's calling
well,
her right
don't,
now.
I don't know, Larry. This Nigel versus Dan match, this could really do something.
Well, we'll suggest it to Grady next week when he's on the show, see what he thinks.
Please do.
Hey, man, you know what? If Michael Cole can draw money or so-called draw money, Nigel and Dan Masters should be all right at it.
That's very true. I'm not sure how much money Michael Cole really drew, but okay, I'll go with that.
Okay, if they gave him a shot at trying to draw money, then let's give them
a shot. That's true.
Just to bring you up to date, Murder One is a little late tonight. And I didn't know if you were familiar with Trent Van Dries, our other co-host. That's the other guy who's talking on here, Mike.
Yeah, okay, that's what I figured.
Okay.
What happened to Murder One?
He's moving.
He's moving?
That's what
he said.
He got evicted.
Is he finally moving to the ghetto or what? Because I heard he's up in this nice apartment
in
Atlanta.
He's moving to the dark. He's moving to a new place in the dark city, apparently.
There you go. About time.
Yeah, I'd say. Hey, Tracy, welcome to Phoning It In. Glad to have you with us.
Hey, how's it going?
Going okay. We're just talking about the Dan Masters-Nigel Sherrod boxing match that's been proposed. So,
see? it's over big.
Yeah, she likes it. Oh, my. Hey, well, if we could we just start at the beginning a little bit and how you guys got started in Hawaii and came together and all and that kind of stuff, how you got started?
Like our personal lives or our wrestling career?
Hey, both.
Man, okay, it's actually a funny story. It actually goes back to high school for us both. I won't tell you which years exposed Tracy's age, but mine was 1994. I think I was a junior in high school, and one of our friends actually hooked us up. He went and told her, he's like, hey, my boy Mike's checking you out. And then he would come tell me, hey, my girl Tracy's checking you out. And then we just kind of linked up from there. I think I told her I was taking her on a date. I think I walked up to her and I go, hey, I'll pick you up at 7 p.m. take you to the Kalaheo basketball game tonight, which was our high school in Hawaii at the time. And then that's where it happened. That's where all the magic happened. All the sparks started flying. Oh, boy. Yep.
And
we're high school sweethearts, man. I guess you can say it. I was 16. She was 17. And we've been together ever since. We went from high school to college, from college to the Marine Corps. From the Marine Corps back to Hawaii, and then we started wrestling. Then we moved to Louisville and went from there.
So did you both get involved in wrestling at the same time?
We did. We went to the beginner school at OVW, Ohio Valley Wrestling, in Louisville, Kentucky, and they asked us, you know, they looked at me, and they were just like, well, you know, do you want to sign up too? And we kind of looked at each other, and I was like, okay, well, I guess so. You know, I'm not doing anything else. So we kind of both started together, but Mike kind of took off before I did, and I kind of took a break because, you know, we have kids, and it's really hard to have all of us doing the same thing. I mean, we eventually got into a groove, but at the time, you know, it was just easier for me to take the back seat.
You do understand, Larry. They see our kids now. Our kids are 15, and the other one's 9. Isaiah's now 15, Amina's 9. But we're training at OVW. We trained at the old OVW warehouse in Jeffersonville, Indiana, right across the bridge, where it was like out of an old Rocky building. And
trainer. I went to that building. Boy, that thing was something else.
It was in January when we trained there. You know what I mean? So it was freezing freaking cold, and we had our daughter, which couldn't have been, man, I don't think she could have been a year or two old, maybe.
Yeah.
She was a year old because it was a. She was almost a year. It was January 2003. And Nick would let us put her in the the playpen, a little bassinet in the side, and our son at the time was he couldn't have been first, second grade, and so he would keep an eye on her, and we would go train. So Tracy was just a year out of giving birth to Mina in the ring training at this old freezing school with broken windows.
Hmm.
Wow.
Talk about paying your dues.
Have you got any crazy Rip Rogers stories?
Oh, man. Here's a good one that I just found out. Well, I got two of them. Every day we used to train with Rip Rogers, and we'd bring in, if you didn't want to do a drill, you'd bring in a protein bar. And you would just give Rip Rogers a protein bar, and he'd let you slide. Well, we showed up one day to training, and there was an ambulance out front. We're like, oh, my God, Rip died today. And so we go inside, and, like, Danny Davis sits us down. He's like, look, Rip's okay, but he thought he was having a heart attack. Come to find out he's having, it's acid reflux buildup in his heart. And they go, and it's from all the protein bars everybody's been giving him. They're like, stop. And we're like, what? We're like, no way. And so the next day, Rip comes in the training and ready to practice, and he's laughing, doing a real Rip Rogers. He's like, ha ha. He goes, good Rip, boys. He goes, you guys try to kill me off so you don't have to train with me no more. He goes, but too bad. He goes, I'm back. So we started practicing again. And then it wasn't too long after that he got released by the WWE from training.
Huh.
And he started working at a gas station, and I guess he was working the midnight shift. And so they said a guy came in and stuck him up at gunpoint to try to rob him. And so he throws, I guess, whatever he had in his hand, a pencil or whatever, he throws it down, puts his hands in the air, and he goes, you know what? Shoot me. He goes, my wife hates me. I think he has a son that's autistic. And he goes, and I'm working the midnight shift at the gas station. He goes, shoot me and put me out of my misery.
Jeez.
And they said the guy put the gun back in his pants and walked out and left him. And he walked in the training the next day, and he goes, ha-ha. He goes, good rib, boys. You guys want to try to rib me last night and hold me up at gunpoint? He goes, but I didn't fall for it. And so everybody was like, Rip, that wasn't us. He's like, whatever. He goes, I'm not going to talk about it no more. It's done. he's a stinking lunatic.
You probably don't. You haven't got any crazy Lars Anderson stories from Hawaii, do you?
No, you know what? I never trained with Lars, and I never even met him when I was there.
Yeah, okay. Didn't think so. Who was in your class with you at OVW?
I heard he was a wanted man.
Yeah,
say that again.
So who was in the class with you at OVW?
In the beginner class, I think we had Seth Skyfire was in the beginner class with us, Mac Johnson, which did a short stint at Deep South with us. Trace, who else was there? I can't even think of who else was in there with us.
It was Victor. It was, what's her name, Amy?
Passion.
Yeah, Passion.
Bam Bam, Terry Penders or something like that. He was OVW for a short stint, too. No, I think the only ones that got hired out of that class were me, Tracy, Seth Skyfire, and Mac Johnson.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
It wasn't too many. And then we moved up to the advanced class, of course. We had Johnny Jeter, Muhammad Hassan, Conway was there, Renee Dupree was there.
Damaja,
yeah. Doug Basham. Jeez, I can't imagine. Nick, yeah. We got there just after Brock Lesnar and John Cena and all those guys just moved up.
So did you move to Louisville specifically to go to wrestling school? Was that the idea of moving to Louisville?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We actually we moved to Richmond, Kentucky. I transferred my job. I was rewiring helicopters. And I would work through lunch Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday so I could get off work 2 hours early on Wednesday so we could drive an hour and a half to the Wednesday night TV taping.
Right.
So we could stand in the crowd and work like security, tell people where to sit, and then drive back home and then train Saturdays in the beginner class.
Wow. Yeah.
I remember one specific afternoon where Mike came home from work, and I was in the kitchen making lunch, and I looked over at the screen door, and I saw this figure standing there, and it scared me to death. And I was like, oh, my gosh, who is that? And I looked outside, and Mike was just standing there at the screen door. And I was like, what are you doing? And he said, I quit my job today. He goes, remember what I came here to do? And I said, yeah. And he goes, well, we need to go do it. So we packed up our stuff from Richmond, Kentucky, and moved on to Louisville, closer to the school. And that was our life. Then we started taking it more serious.
Go ahead, Larry. I'll be back in a little bit, okay?
Okay. You touched on this earlier, and it was something I was curious to really ask about anyway, is how do you maintain a semblance of a family life in the pro, you know, doing the pro wrestling business with kids and all?
Well, you know, you have to have balance. You have to make sure everything is taken care of equally in the household. I mean, you know, you have your kids, of course, they always come first. And then, of course, we have our semi-jobs during the week. I mean, I'm, you know, a fitness instructor, so I'm gone sporadically throughout the day. Mike just picked up a personal training job at the same gym. And, of course, we have our, you know, weekend gigs that we do. So, I mean, it's tough sometimes, you know, when the kids have, you know, homework that needs to be done. And, you know, my daughter, she had to pass a certain CRCT test in order to pass to the next grade. So we were on her, you know, we were making sure she was, you know, doing her studies. And, you know, our son, of course, was wrestling for the school. He was an amateur wrestler. And, you know, we had to make sure we got to all his tournaments. Mike was there all the time by his side, coaching him through every match. And then, of course, you know, we'd have to, you know, sometimes leave to go on some wrestling shows. But we always make sure that the kids come first. I mean, you know, you just have to. There's no question about it. They always get taken care of before anything else. But at the same time, we have to make those gigs or else we don't make money. And so you have to find a way to balance everything, you know. You just have to stay grounded and make sure everything gets taken care of.
Oh, my hat's off to you, because I know it's challenging enough as it is, and then trying to do the in doing it with what's required in the world of pro wrestling as well. That's really commendable. So your son's already taking after you in the wrestling business, eh?
He is. His passion lies within the skateboarding realm. You know, he wants to be a professional skateboarder, and he's really good at it. He's really good at what he does, and he enjoys going to the skate park and, you know, living there. And, you know, he calls us when he needs to be picked up, and we take him there and drop him off. But as far as the amateur wrestling goes, he just has natural talent. Like, he goes out there and, you know, Mike tells him what to do, and he just – it takes him a little bit to warm up. I mean, you have to kind of get him mad for it to come out. And so, he, you know, once he gets mad, you know, watch out, because then he's on fire.
Then he's good. Keep in mind,
talent.
he was a freshman wrestling varsity this year, and he, you know, he did good at wrestling varsity. You know, as a freshman wrestling seniors and stuff like that, you're going to do okay. But he did a JV tournament, and he freaking, you know, he mopped the floor with everybody else. I think he pinned everybody but the first guy that beat him. And that guy ended up getting first in the tournament, so it was real good.
Yeah.
Yeah, because
I
would
think
as a freshman, he'd be at a strength disadvantage to those older guys.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, and, you know, he was really hard on himself because he just wants to win. And, of course, everybody just wants to win, and especially somebody his age. He's 15, you know. He doesn't want to, you know, be on a losing streak, so he would get really down on himself if he lost the match. But, I mean, he doesn't understand, like, how good he really, you know, he really did.
So he's going to do his thrill-seeking on the skateboard instead of in a wrestling.
So far. You know, we took him to a live event. Like, MVP came and took us to, I think it was SmackDown taping in Macon.
Uh-huh.
And he just sit there and he looks at it and he goes, yeah, I could see myself doing this. I'm like, yeah, I'm sure you could when you see all the glamour in it.
Right.
So when he's looking
right.
at the struggling side, the part that we do, the hustling, the driving there and driving home at night, sometimes seeing the sun come up, he's like, I don't want anything to do with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of people don't realize that. Heck, you realize it. I don't know if you stayed in, is it Gallatin?
I did stay up. I don't like doing those long drives at night. I don't enjoy that, so I stayed over, but yeah.
Usually we make those home, but we didn't make it. We made it to Dalton, and I had to pull over.
We were so delirious. We couldn't make it. There's no way.
Yeah, that's a long show. Did you wrestle amateur, Mike?
I did. I wrestled, it's kind of a funny story. I wrestled 7th and 8th grade in South Carolina. My dad was in the Marine Corps. And the middle school didn't have a wrestling team. So my brother was a senior in high school, and I told him, I said, well, I want to wrestle. And that was his first year. So his coach, I actually started the middle school coming up to the high school there. And I could never wrestle an actual match, but I could wrestle preliminaries because it was varsity. But every year at the banquets, I lettered 2 years, 7th and 8th grade, I lettered for the varsity at Battery Creek High School in South Carolina. And then we moved to Hawaii. I wrestled my freshman, sophomore, and then senior year over there.
Were you guys big wrestling pro wrestling fans growing up?
I was. Tracy liked GLOW, which I don't know if you call that pro wrestling.
Yeah. I watched GLOW when I was younger. And, you know, when I, after, you know, growing up and starting at OVW and, like, everybody talking about WCW and talking about, I never associated GLOW with the kind of professional wrestling and stuff. I never associated the two together. But then, you know, it all, like, came together, and I'm like, wait a minute, I used to watch something like that.
Larry, I watched GLOW as a professional wrestling sport, and when my friends came over, we videotaped it, and we pressed pause whenever they were in roll-up, trying to see if we could see any slippage. That's how we watched it, but we were thoroughly entertained by it.
Well, you got to think, you know, my dad wasn't going to let me watch a bunch of men, you know, walking around in skimpy shorts. He was going to let me watch the women, of course. So he could sit there and watch it with us.
Oh, my. Well, I'm really curious to know about Deep South, of course, because that's where really the first time I got to see you guys, you know, your work in the ring and so forth. And I'm really curious about your experiences there. I know when you started, Mike, you were development, but Tracy, you weren't at that time, right?
No, I wasn't. I came in, you know, afterwards, and I didn't even, you know, they started out at Gold's Gym because they didn't have a ring.
We didn't have a building. The floor
wasn't even
done
yet. You didn't have anything to train in, so they started training at Gold's Gym. And they, you know, they just did a bunch of cardio and calisthenics, and I did it one day. You know, I went there and I did it one day, but it was tough training. I mean, all of it, even when they got a ring in a building, it was really tough.
Yeah.
You know, it was of course it was reputed to be that the training was, I guess the criticisms that I heard of it were that it was too much repetitions of things and drills and so forth. Was sort of overdone, and that some guys were complaining about that. What was your take on the type of training at Deep South, Mike?
At first, of course, we were gung-ho about it. You know, right out of the gates, we're like, oh, we've made it. We're WWE contract, even though it was developmental. And so that's what we did. We did a ton of cardio, man. And I think we did so much, Larry, that I think guys' bodies started, like, dying and withering away. Like Danny Inferno. I don't know if you remember him. Danny Giamondo.
Yes.
But when he came here, he looked like $1 million. And then after a while, he just looked like death. And I just told him, like, Danny, dude, you're all right. I just think we did so much, burnt so many calories that it was hard to maintain your bodies. But we would run the ropes. That tough enough? You see it on TV? They were running ropes for 3 minutes. All that stuff. We did that plus more. When 3 minutes of running the ropes got too easy, we started blowing the whistle and doing drop downs in the middle of running the ropes for 3 minutes. And we crisscrossed. So we had two guys in there at once. And then we would do five up and over with a back roll to your feet in each corner. And we had to do it under, I think, 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we had, like, races on to do it, squats. And we squatted every day. We did two laps around the whole venue every morning before training. And really, when I learned to wrestle is when Dave Taylor got hired. And then he had his own class. And then me and Dave were married. I was in Dave's class forever. And that's when we did wrestling matches and, I learned the English style from there. And then that's when I really started sinking in. Okay, this is wrestling.
Wow.
You know?
So how long were you into your tenure at Deep South before Dave Taylor came on and started that class?
6 months to a year, had to be. I would say 6 months. 6 months to a year. And I think we were only there for 2 years. I don't think it lasted much longer than that.
No, that's my recollection. It was about 2 years. So the first 6 months, you weren't really doing matches as part of the training?
We did matches in front of no crowd at first because we had to do it for the office to see, and we'd send them up every week.
Mm-hmm.
But we had a set day where we did matches. And then when we first got going, we did a lot of cardio and drills, and then we would do we may start putting together matches, do one match a day or something like that. But it kind of was nothing like OVW at the time, because OVW we did drills, but we did a lot of psychology drills, like Rip would teach us how to blow a comeback. Instead of going, you see it all the time, you see Zero to Hero. Guys would be getting beat up on, and then all of a sudden they're blowing a comeback, and the guy's bumping and feeding for them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Rip would break it down for us, and he's like, you picture it like a strength meter on a video game. Boom, you know what I mean? You counter this, you dodge that, you throw a punch here, and it slowly your power increases to finally you can blow that comeback. That's the stuff we learned at OVW.
So you build into it. You just don't just from 0 to 100 in one step.
Right. So that's we learned a lot of that stuff, you know, up there. And then, you know, of course we did some blow-up drills and stuff like that. But I don't know. It was just night and day. OVW and Deep South, night and day. We may have did two matches a week. It was my recollection of it, what I remember.
Hmm.
And then, of course, when we opened the doors, then most of our matches were, you know, live TV. What, I think
and,
it was Thursdays?
Yeah, the old Thursday night shows out there. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, but I'm curious what your, both of you, what your take was on Joe Hamilton, if you could give me your impressions of him.
Joe Hamilton. Trace, you want to go first?
Well, he really didn't, you know, from what I remember, he wasn't really out, you know, during practice. The only time I ever saw him was on Fridays when we used to go over the matches. And he used to, you know, break it down and tell us what we could have did better, tell us what we did wrong, you know. And then he would, you know, sit there. And the only thing I really remember is him saying, hell of a show. You know,
yep. So, I'd put that up against the product any day.
Yeah. And I mean, he was, you know, he was laid back for the most part. And I mean, but if you made him mad, you would know it. He'd come storming out of that office. So, I mean, the girls, we're girls, and he was probably a little nicer to us than anybody. I don't know.
Do you remember him getting mad at the? Did he get mad at the girls though too?
Not from what I can remember. Not from what I can recall.
Okay.
Not really.
Kind of like Rip Rogers. Rip Rogers would chew my butt out left and right. In fact, he tried to throw me out of training one day up there. But then it comes to the girls, and he goes, "I don't want to yell at you because I don't want you to cry." He goes, "Just know what you did wrong, and I'll see you later."
Oh wow.
But Joe, my. I remember Jody as he was in the office a lot of the time, but he was formatting TV. And
mm-hmm.
when we watched TV back, he critiqued every match. We watched every match, and then he'd always push pause, and he'd always ask us what we thought first, and then he'd tell us what he thought. There were times when it was a huge pat on my back when he'd look at me and ask me what I thought, and I'd critique my own match, and he'd go, "Well," he goes, "I thought it was a hell of a match," and he goes, "And I don't want to waste my time critiquing it because there was more rights than there were wrongs." And he goes, "So just let it go." But I learned a lot from Joe when Rampage came along and he was booking down there. I'd meet with him in his pickup truck while he smoked a cigar. He would show me how to format TV, and we'd come up with storylines and we'd talk, you know. So my experience with Jody Hamilton was good.
But you got to you really got to know him more at Rampage than you did at Deep South. Is that right?
Yeah, Deep South, he was more of a boss. You were kind of scared of him at first until you got to know him. And then you realize how much he was actually there for everybody. You know, and himself, Jody Hamilton's a money guy. Don't get me wrong. He knows how to make money. He knows how to write storylines. He knows how to format TV. He knows wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so when we were there, he had a job, we had a job. But when we went down to Rampage, it was more of, I saw a different side of Joe. I saw a side where he was going to, you know, he was there to help me out at the same time, which is how I took it. And if a legend would take his time out of his day, I know it was probably a rib sitting in his pickup truck in the middle of a parking lot. You know, he'd probably go home and laugh. But at the same time, I learned from him. I learned a lot from him. And I took it with me.
And how about your takes on Bill DeMott?
Tracy?
Well, you know, it was an experience. I mean, we were really good friends at one time. And, he helped me get hired, and you know, he was, you know, he really had my back when it came to making sure that I was on the right track to getting hired, and he, you know, he helped me out. And so, you know, I thank him for that. And I don't know where the, you know, it became different. But, well, hey, what are you going to do? So a lot of my wrestling training really did come from Mike and Dave Taylor. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of times when I just felt like there was just tension all the time, tension, 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 and you were always afraid to say, you know, something. You didn't want to say the wrong thing, or if you didn't say hi in the morning, then it was like you were going to get, you know, reprimanded for it, or I don't know. It just, there was just a lot of tension.
There's a ton of tension, Larry. I'll be honest to say it. Like, Bill was behind me getting hired, too, up at OVW and coming down here, and everybody was good friends, but it seemed like there were some cancers in the locker room. And, you know what I mean? So tension started building amongst everybody. And then there was a point where we had separate classes. We had Dave Taylor's class, and we had Bill DeMott's class. I was married to Dave Taylor. For some reason, Tracy was in Bill DeMott's class. He tried to split us up.
Huh.
And we trained 4 hours a day from 8 a.m. to noon with my class, and then from noon to 4 p.m. with her class. But Mina wasn't even in school yet. Our daughter wasn't even in school yet. And we lived 15, 20 minutes from the arena with nobody else living by us. We had one car. So it made it rough on us. And do I think it was a shot at us? Yeah, I think it was a shot at us to try to, you know what I mean, make it hard on us. Because when Bill liked you, you're on top of the world. But when Bill didn't like you, it was anything and everything, you were going to get fired, and life was just going to be miserable for you. That's the nicest way I can put it.
So who were his favorites?
Derek
Neikirk,
Ryan O'Reilly, and Mike Knox.
I'm sorry, say it again.
Derek Neikirk, Ryan O'Reilly, and Mike Knox were on top of his favorites. Those were his boys.
Uh-huh.
Which is cool. Mike Knox is, to me, I love wrestling him, and he's one of the coolest guys that I've met. Neikirk, on the other hand, we had our own issues. We stayed away from each other. And O'Reilly and Knox were kind of good friends, so they always hung out too. But those were definitely on the side. I'm going to tell you exactly what happened. We were doing Six Flags shows.
Yeah.
And I think this is where it went sour for me. He pulled me, Tony, and Tracy in the office. And he said, I just want you guys to know that I'm pushing for these guys to go first. Because their bodies are brittle, they get injured a lot, and you guys can handle the training. And they need to get out of here before they break. Well, I took that as, how is my hard work and, you know, my efforts and stuff like that, how is that punishing me to make me stay longer in developmental than getting me out of here? So I got sour on that. I may have took it wrong, and you know what I mean? But to me, that's where me and Bill's turn went. I took that as an insult more than a compliment. And I thought, you know what I mean, why should I be the first one in the ring working hard? Why should I work with everybody? Why would guys come to me as a locker room leader for me to not get pushed or just to me get punished for it? So it just kind of, it put a sour taste in my mouth. And I, you know what I mean? I hate to say it like that, but that's my true feelings is where me and Bill's relationship went sour, went a little south. Do we still keep it? Yeah, we still, you know, we're still friends and stuff like that. But professionally, it went south right there.
Well, there was a point, correct me if I'm wrong, that you and Tony Santarelli were really in line to be moved up to the main roster, and it didn't happen.
Mm-hmm. There was numerous times we were going to go. The first time we were going to go was versus Eminem, and I think something happened with Joey Mercury at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I think he might have went to rehab or something like that. I forget. So, of course, that got pushed back. And then there was another time we were supposed to go, and then they debuted the Teacher's Pet. And we had people calling us saying we were advertised on eight weeks' worth of house shows, you know, which I thought was great. And the Teacher's Pets debuted, and so they pushed us back and gave them the slots, which is, you know, fine, too. There was a time when we've got travel. Nick Patrick brought our travel to TV here in McDonough. We showed up to the airport, and everything was canceled, and nobody told us. And so
our
bags went to Syracuse, and we stayed there because I called Howard Finkel. I go, something's not right. Because they told us our outbound was canceled, but our return flights were good. So they actually gave us the tickets. And after talking with Nick Patrick, he goes, you might want to call Howard Finkel. And so Howard Finkel goes, oh, my God. He goes, you guys are supposed to go to Raw in a few weeks. Do not go on this trip. And we said, okay, no problem. So we stayed here. Then there was a time we got called. We were going to the X Games to shoot vignettes. And then, we, you know what I mean, nothing happened. and then we were going to go the last loop on ECW, and then Tony was injured. And then I heard later that it was talked about me and Tracy going by ourselves, and then they canceled the whole last ECW house show loop. And then it was about a month or so after that they released us.
Well, when it got to those, that points where you were supposed to go, were DeMott and Hamilton pushing for you at that point?
I believe so. I always heard, like, even though we butted heads, I always heard Bill DeMott always put us over in the report saying these guys need to get out of here. And I just heard that again the other day. Like, he never really threw us under. He just said that, you know, these guys are wasting their time down here. They need to get up on the road, do something with them. So I don't know why to this day. They never really gave us a reason why, besides creative didn't have anything for us. And we've heard a ton of rumors. But in my opinion, it's creative job to come up with something for us. So shouldn't creative get reprimanded for it, not us?
Yeah, well, a lot of people in that boat would have been in that boat, WWEA, where creative just didn't have, didn't have anything for them. So.
Yeah. We were actually we did a house show in Savannah. Me, Tony, I think it was versus Knox and Neikert, which we always had great matches in.
Yeah.
The next day was SmackDown TV taping in Charleston, South Carolina. It was actually a Sunday taping. I think they were going overseas. And Bill called me the next day, and he goes, "I screwed you over." He goes, "I'm sorry." And I was like, "Why? What are you talking about?" And he goes, "Well, I told you guys to go to the house show and not TV." He goes, "But Johnny called and said that, you know, Vince wanted to know where these developmental guys were. They got put over in the report. And he wanted to give them a dark match for TV that day, but we weren't there."
Wow.
And I go, "Oh, man, don't worry about it. It'll happen again." You know, so it was nobody did it on purpose. It just happened. But who knows if that could have been our shot, too, you know?
Yeah, I remember you guys having some great matches with Neikert and Knox.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I still watch them on YouTube, and I'm just, you know, I just sit there and I'm amazed because you don't see matches like that anywhere.
No, they were good. That was some of the best stuff I saw going down there for sure. Tracy, I'm curious about your take on some of the other women that were at Deep South at the time. I'm thinking Angel Williams and Chrissy Vain and.
Well, I started out. Well, Angel was the first contracted diva that was at Deep South, and I believe wasn't there another person that came in before me, Mike?
Angel, Chrissy, Michelle McCool.
Oh yeah.
Well, I think it was, you know, I came in around the time that Michelle came in. And it was me, Angel, Michelle, and then I remember Trenisha, and then Chrissy came later, and then Chantel came after.
Oh, Rebecca DiPietro.
Well,
DiPietro.
Yeah, and then they all came after.
Oh, okay.
They all came after. But I started with, you know, Angel and Michelle McCool and Trenisha, and then Chrissy came later. But I loved working with Angel. She, you know, she's a great worker. We weren't friends. Per se, you know, like, we weren't enemies, but we weren't friends. Like, we just didn't hang out. Like, that wasn't just we just weren't the type of people to hang out with each other.
Me and Tracy were more of, we had a family, and nobody else really did, but we stayed away for a while.
I'm more of a homebody anyway. Like, I don't go out shopping, and I don't go, you know, hang out anywhere. I don't go to $3 cafe and hang out with the girls, you know. I'm not that type of person. Me and Michelle hit it off really good because she's very similar to me. She's a homebody, and she would rather stay at home and watch a movie than, you know, go out and hang out at a bar. So we really, you know, hit it off really good. We used to go to the gym together and hang out. Chrissy, you know, she was okay. We just kind of stayed out of each other's way. And, and Chantel was really cool, you know, when she was down at Deep South, she was really cool and down to earth, and, you know, she just wanted to have a good match, you know, she didn't really, to me, it didn't seem like she got into any of the drama or whatever, you know, and I tried to stay out of it, too. I tried to not have any drama with the girls, because I just don't like to be in that kind of environment, so I, you know, just tried to stay out of everybody's way and just do what I went there to do, and which was just, you know, try to make it as a diva. And it was hard enough, you know, having to compete with all the guys and having to compete with the girls that are already on TV, I just figured, you know, let me just try to do my best at what I'm doing and, you know, see what happens. But, yeah.
Do you feel like you got a fair shake from WWE?
No.
No, I don't think so. I, you know, sometimes I still get a little, it gets under my skin a little bit to hear that, you know, a lot of people from Deep South got second shots, and, like, we haven't even been offered a second shot. Like nobody's even, like, people pretend like we don't even exist. So it's just, it's really, it gets under your skin a little bit. But what are you going to do? You got to keep moving forward.
I don't mean to cut you off, Trace, but especially when, they tell you, you know what I mean, you know, we're going to release you right now. We want to see you get out there and get yourselves over. Well, I think me and Tracy are one of the only ones out of developmental that when we got released, don't get me wrong, I think them releasing us was probably one of the best things that happened to us at the time because we've gotten so much better learning to work with guys that don't know how to wrestle, guys that have been around the indie scenes for a while, guys, we both went to Japan. We both went to my mom's house in Hawaii after we got released for a year. I slept on the floor in the bedroom while Tracy slept on the bed with the kids. So we got the opportunity to go to Japan, but we did. We went and got ourselves over in Japan. We went to England. I got over in England. Tracy went to Mexico and wrestled three or four times. Lucha Libre USA offered her a contract that she turned down. You know, so we did go get ourselves over. So it is, like she said, it is a sore spot, in my opinion, that we never got a second shot because we were good. You know, and I know it sounds conceited, Larry, but we were freaking good. We're good now, and I think we can draw anybody money.
Well, it doesn't sound conceited to me in the sense that I've gotten to see both of you wrestle, you know, in numerous different promotions around the South, and, you know, happen to think both of you are excellent wrestlers and every bit deserve that shot. And, I mean, I hope that it happens, but I don't have much faith in, I just don't have much understanding of how WWE operates and makes their decisions about a lot of things. So, That's just me. Tracy, I mean, it just seems you in particular have improved so much as a wrestler in the last few years.
Well, thank you.
She's gotten really good as a female wrestler.
What do you attribute the improvement? Is it just getting in so many different places, working so many different people, and just the time element? What do you think has made the difference?
You know, it is. You know, when I got released, I was still confused. I was still, you know, just like, am I ever going to get this? Am I ever going to, you know, be able to just go in there and call a match and just, you know, not have to worry about, like, you know, the spots I'm going to do or whatever. But just, I think I learned more on the car rides talking to Mike. And, you know, if I had a match with somebody that was really green and I had to lead them, you know, of course, I made tons of mistakes. And just Mike, you know, ripping it apart, telling me, you know, next time do this. And it's all about, like, getting out there and actually making mistakes. Like, if you don't get out there and make mistakes and, you know, take constructive criticism. Like, a lot of people don't like to take constructive criticism. They, you know, they kind of just yeah you and you're just like, yeah, whatever. You know, and they just go do their thing again and they do it wrong again. But I really challenged myself to get better. Like, I wanted to be the best. I want, you know, if I'm going to do this and I'm going to make money at it, then I need to be the best. I want to be the best, and I want people to know who I am when I'm on the show. And that's my goal. Like, I just want people to, you know, want to book me, and I want the fans to be excited, you know, that I'm coming to a show.
Well, and nothing against the women who are in WWE on TV and so forth, but when I watch the way you put together a match, and I know often when I'm seeing you now, you're working with people that are, you know, fairly inexperienced, and you're the one leading them through the match. And the way you're able to do that and get good matches out of some women who are pretty inexperienced, I think it's quite a credit to your where you are as a wrestler.
You know, I'll remember one thing that Dr. Jeff said to me at one of the practices. He watched me wrestle one of the girls, like, I can't remember who it was, but I think it was Lala. I want to say it was Lala or Melissa Coates, one of the two that were inexperienced. And we did a match, and after the match, you know, he sat there really quiet, and then he looked up, and, you know, he was giving a speech to the whole lot, you know, to everybody there. And then he you know, pointed me out and said, this girl could have a match with a broomstick. And it just made me feel so good. You know, I was like, wow, this is from, you know, Steve Williams, and I was kind of taken back by it. But, I remember that, and it made me feel really good. So it's been my goal to be able to lead these girls through matches, and these girls that are inexperienced, I've been there. I've been in their shoes, and I'm not there to make them look bad. You know, I'm there to bring them up to my level. And it just goes with, you know, them trusting me and me being able to trust them and letting them know that, hey, if we're going to have a good match, we got to work together. Like, there's no animosity here. We just got to work together and make sure everything, you know, we're safe and just have fun. That's the biggest thing right there is if you're not having fun, then you shouldn't be doing it because this is entertainment.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
you need to have fun. If you're not having fun, the crowd is not going to be having fun watching you.
Right.
They're just going to be, you know, sitting there. So you got to make sure you're having fun at what you're doing and entertaining people because that's what it's all about.
Well, as you travel around to the various places that, you know, I know you're going all over the place. I see where you're going to be up in Cleveland, Tennessee, if I'm not mistaken, here very shortly. And
yeah.
I see your name popping up all over. Who do you see as up-and-coming talents with the women that you're working with these days around the various places you go?
You know, Pandora. I didn't even know she existed here in Georgia. She's been living here apparently for like 8 years. She's been wrestling
yeah.
at Platinum
yeah.
Championship Wrestling. And I just recently found out about her, and I was just blown away the first time. I mean, she is, I think, and I don't want this to sound bad or anything, but I think she does have a lot to learn. As far as, you know, the psychology of a match and how to, you know, how to make it more entertaining. She likes to do a lot of, I would say spots, but, they're just little things that she's got to work on. But, I mean, as far as, like, her being relaxed in the ring and being able to listen and being able to just react, I think is a big a plus, and she's got it, you know. And I think if she just goes to training somewhere where somebody knows what they're doing as far as teaching, I think she can get, you know, that much better. But
well,
I enjoy working with her.
You just hit on a sore subject with me. It seems like there's so many people working on the independent scene that really haven't had the proper training, and it just shows through in their matches that they haven't.
Right.
Well, could you speak to that? could you speak to that aspect of the current independent scene?
I just wish that, you know, people would really, if you have a school nearby and you have a decent trainer that knows what they're talking about, and I mean, you got to really check their credentials too. Like, where have they been? Have they been, you know, invited, or have they, you know, sent themselves places? But that is, you know, You want to check to see what they've done and, you know, watch their matches and see, you know, how they work. And if you have a school nearby and you're able to go train. Like, don't be lazy about it. Go train and get better, and
mm-hmm.
they're going to see.
Don't think you're too good to train.
Right, yeah, don't think you're too good to train because there's always something to learn in professional wrestling, always. I'm still learning. And I don't want to ever stop learning, you know, because the more I learn, you know, the more I can entertain those fans. And that's what it's all about. It's about the fans. It's not about you in the ring, because if you don't have those fans watching you, then what do you got? Nothing.
Yeah, yeah. I'm forgetting right now the veteran wrestler that I interviewed. He'd been wrestling for 25 years, and he said he learned something every show he goes to. And he, you know, like you're saying, he hope it never stops, but he learns something every time he goes.
Right.
Mike, let me ask you that same question. As you travel around all over, who do you see as up-and-coming talents that you like? Do you see as having a bright future ahead of them?
Oh, man, I'm trying to think. I'm trying to think of all the places. I'm trying to think Alabama, Tennessee. I think a lot of the guys at Saw have a lot of potential up there in Nashville. And I think the more they keep working with Paul and those guys, I think, to me, those guys have a good future ahead of them up there. The OVW guys, I know some of them. There's this guy at OVW, his name's Alex Silva.
Yes.
He's a French, French-Canadian Portuguese kid. I think of all the guys, he's got one of the brightest futures. He looks good. He's always tan. He's young. He might be 19 right now, 18, 19. And he's eager to learn. He came and stayed with us for a few weeks, and he was the biggest turd that I've ever met in my life, and we scolded him for it. And to this day, he thanks me for it. He pulled me aside, and he goes, dude, thank you for making me realize that I was a punk. And he's just been, everybody loves him everywhere he goes. OVW made him TV champion.
You know, he hasn't been on OVW TV lately. Is something up with him?
He had to go back. He had to go back to Canada for a problem. So I guess you can only come and train for so long, and then he's got to go back.
All right.
But keep a lookout for that kid. He's going to be money. He was down here in Georgia a few times, and he was real green. But he was good. As a green kid, he was good. And now he's getting even better. Now he's main eventing or semi-main eventing shows. He wrestled Carlito in the main event in Virginia a few months back.
He
carried the load. He did a good job.
Anybody in particular you like at Saw?
There's a lot of them. Like the ones I got to watch, I like the dude that looks like Bruiser Brody. He just cracks me up.
Josephus.
Yeah, he just cracks me up. I love watching him, and he's the coolest dude in the back. But I think when it comes to, like, talent-wise and stuff like that, I think his name's Genesis. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
I like the kid that wears the little Speedos that's with Derek King.
Drew Haskins.
Drew Haskins, I think, has got a ton of potential. And I think the lawyer guy, he wears little Speedos, too. And
Jesse Emerson.
Yeah, I think he's good, too. He cracks me up also. But those three guys are the main ones that stick out in my head.
Well, you know, you talk about training. There's some guys that have good training. Reno Riggins trained Drew Haskins. Jeff Daniels trained Josephus. Jeff Daniels and Dutch Mantel both have worked with Josephus.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, they're getting some good training and have had some good training. So.
Yeah, and he goes in there. I just call him Bruiser Brody lookalike.
Yeah,
but
Josephus.
Joe goes out there, and he's slow. He's slow. You know what I mean? He knows how to work his gimmick. I think he knows how to work like Bruiser Brody, and I think he does a great job at it.
Well, he's a guy who's advanced a lot in the last, I'm going to say, 6 months to a year. He's come a long way, but it's during that time frame that he's been working with Dutch Mantel and Jeff Daniels, and that's made all the difference in the world. So
yeah, you can't go wrong there.
Speaking of training, tell us about your school.
Well, we had a school kind of fall in our lap here in McDonough, Georgia, which works for me because I'm having a good time with it. I've actually missed the last 2 weeks. Tracy's had to go train the guys. But it's the Underground School of Pro Wrestling. It's right here in McDonough, Georgia, 235 McDonough Parkway.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually inside independent MMA. So it's actually a good school. We got weights there. They got Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. They got boxing, kickboxing. You name it, they got it there. It's actually a great place to train. And we have run of the place. And we actually have one of the The Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu instructor, Byron, actually trains with us when he can. But it's in the back there. We got a ring up, and it's $25 a week, and we train 3 days a week. And you can go there and lift weights anytime you want, whenever they're open. And everybody works hard. We go Monday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. And everybody's doing really good. One of my guys I'm proud of is Spiral came over from Bill DeMott's school when Bill DeMott closed the school temporarily.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been working hard, and he's there every day. He goes on Tuesdays there by himself and works out with some of the other guys. We got another guy, Andrew, that's doing really good. He wrestles as Van Gruber in Alabama, so he's getting bookings now too. We got another guy. He's about 6'7". His name's Ben, and unfortunately, he just broke his arm. But for a tall guy that came in there that couldn't roll, that now he's doing awesome. And he's actually jumping over the top rope to the floor like he's a veteran in there. And he still comes with a broken arm. He still comes to training, still watches, still goes to the show with the guys. You know, and he still does what he does, you know, got to do. And what's his name? Steven Stiles. I'm sure you heard of him. He's running down
Steven Stiles,
in middle Georgia.
Yeah.
He drives up and he trains with us still. He works hard. We've actually got a guy, I call him Crowbar because he's like a piece of lead when I tie up with him. But his name's Isaiah Raines. And,
We just got a good core bunch of guys that actually enjoy training there, and they actually listen and they learn, and I teach them the same thing that I've learned. You know, me and Tracy, we've been, you know, blessed with training with everybody from Nick Dinsmore, Rip Rogers, Finley. We had a day with Steamboat. Arn Anderson used to come all the time. Dave Taylor, Jody Hamilton, Bill DeMott, everybody, you know. So we just take what we've learned and give it. But it fell in our laps by, everybody knows Ronnie Gossett, the world-famous promoter here in the Southeast, that probably owes everybody money.
Yeah.
That's an inside joke. But he invited me. He's like, hey, you know, I'm going to open the school with or without you. He goes, you know, I'd like you to come there. You can train guys, and you keep, you know, 75% of the tuition if you want, and just, you know, donate the other 25% to the school. I said, yeah, no problem. Well, 2 months later, nobody could find him. And then, the building came and talked to me, and I said, you know, I got lucky, and I have enough students to pay the rent. And we've just been rocking and rolling ever since, man, and it's actually a good time. And I think Tracy just opened our Facebook page. I think, what is it, School of Pro Wrestling, Tracy?
Yeah, it's under Micah's name because I'm not very Facebook literate.
So it's on Facebook, though?
Yes, it is, and it's another site that has Micah Taylor's name, and it says Underground SOPW, School of Pro Wrestling.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, and I think I friend requested you. I think you accepted.
Oh, I got it. Yeah, I got it here.
Yeah.
I'll get it up. I'll get put a post up on the George Wrestling History site about it.
Yeah,
and I'm gonna post more pictures. Yeah, I'm gonna post more pictures of it and people training there and stuff. So I should have that up soon.
Yep.
Hey, Tracy, at one time, I know you weren't you training Scrappy McGowan's daughter, Nikki Diamond? Is she still training?
I was. No, unfortunately, she's not training anymore. She, told me that this was just a hobby for her. And I wish she would. You know, she's got a lot of potential, and she's young, you know, and she's one of those natural talents. Like, if she would come to training, she would be really good, and it's just that.
She would be awesome.
Yeah, unfortunately, she's just one of those girls that just doesn't want to train, so I can't.
Not yet,
you know.
Is it
you
just
know what,
me,
Larry,
or there's just...
Go
ahead.
I totally left it out, but we actually have a referee that's training with us also. His name's Harold, and he was the guy that walked in, and I was cracking up laughing, going, what, this guy wants to be a referee? And he's gotten pretty dang good and surprised everybody there. And I think he's refereeing for that promotion up in Stockbridge. I don't know what they're called, but I think they just started
Mid-Georgia Championship Wrestling.
Yes, them. And so a lot of our guys are getting bookings, you know what I mean? Not just through me, but they're getting bookings. Nigel called me one day, and they needed a bunch of guys for a Battle Royal for Mike Jackson. You know,
uh-huh.
So if you're looking to learn to wrestle and get bookings, you know what I mean, we're the place to go.
Cool. And correct me if I'm wrong, you're also doing some work with Mad Dog Sawyer on putting some shows together. Is that right?
Mad Dog Dan Sawyer out of Birmingham. Yeah, me and him, we've actually become pretty good friends. Actually, me, him, his wife April, and Tracy. And he just asked me one day, he's like, look, man, he goes, it's kind of overwhelming trying to run a promotion by yourself. And he's been doing it since like 94 or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
He's been doing it for a long time, so he's doing something right. And he asked me, he's like, look, you know, I know you were running Rampage for a while, and they were doing pretty good at one point, and all I want is just help with finishes and finding talent and stuff like that. And we just started kind of working together, and I'm going to go tomorrow to try to lock the building down here in McDonough for a show. I'm shooting for July 23rd, but if it's taken, it'll probably be July 22nd. And then Cassidy Riley out of Monroe is starting to work with Mad Dog also, so he wants to take it to Monroe, Louisiana. We just want to start a territory, man. That's it. We just want something good, something fun, something all the guys can stay warm on, you know what I mean, and keep working and just get our names out there, keep pressing away.
Were you happy with the way the Pell City show came out, bringing in Gallows and Carlito and so forth?
I was real happy with it because I think Cassidy and Chase did a great job of making the Brotherhood, bringing them up a notch. I think Drew did a great job working Luke Gallows.
Yes.
And Luke Gallows is just like Tracy. Since Deep South, he's amazing. He's one of the best big man workers that I've worked with in a while. And he comes to train every so often. You know, he'll pop into the school here too. But he's just become a machine. And a matter of fact, he's got a I don't know if I should say it, but he's got a tryout tonight as we speak with a company down south in Orlando.
Cool.
And, you know, knock on wood, I hope he gets a job because he deserves it. And just Carlito coming in. I've known Carlito since OVW days when he first got hired. And I just think it gave more quality to Mad Dog Show, you know, bringing those guys in. I think when Carlito came out to do autographs and pictures, I think it shocked people going, holy crap, he's here.
Yeah, we got a real star here, like a real TV star.
Right, well, another
too.
One.
Yeah.
Yeah, another one. Besides the guy Carlito worked, not going to mention myself or nothing. But, no, those guys, I was real happy with how everything went. Everything just went real smooth. Nobody asked any questions, and everybody pressed forward. The locker room was great. Everybody had a good time. If Luke Gallows or Carlito, any of the guys in the back asked them for an autograph or a picture, they were more than happy to do it.
You know, it's interesting to me when guys do get released from one of the major league groups, what road they take. And, you know, you and Tracy and Luke Gales, and another guy I would put in that group is Austin Creed, who I know he got signed. I forget what name they've got him under in Florida now, but he just
Xavier
kept getting better.
Something.
Yeah, he just kept getting – Xavier Woods. Yeah, he just kept getting better and better.
Yeah, I tell my guys that it's not a racist business, but it is a racist business because they're always looking for the next, culture or race, you know what I mean, to be a top star. And I think Creed is a good babyface black guy, that he looks good, he works good, he's friendly, you know what I mean? People just like him. He's likable. And I think he may be their next top black guy, you know what I mean, if I'm saying that politically correct.
Yeah, well, I mean, we were talking earlier in the show about the guy who's in TNA now as Anarchia, who was Matt Barella in OVW, and I mean, you know.
Yeah, we know him. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he's they needed a Hispanic guy who could talk well, and he got the spot.
Yep, they needed a legit Hispanic guy that could talk well.
Yeah.
He was lowrider up at OVW, so I'm sorry, he was there when we were there too.
Oh, I didn't realize he went back that far.
Yeah, I remember him. I remember being in the beginner class with him.
Okay.
In fact, we made one of his first singlets for him because we make a lot of gear for the guys, too.
All right. Hey, so if somebody is interested in getting in touch with you for training, go through the Facebook, or what's the best way?
If you go through the Facebook, it's got my number clear as day on there. So you can text me, you can call me, you can message me through Facebook. I'd rather you message me because it gets overwhelming, my phone going crazy.
Okay.
But that was a good rib of putting my cell phone number up on the sign and putting it on Facebook.
Yeah, I see it's right there, so that's pretty hard to miss.
Yeah, if that was me, I'd be prank calling you at 3 in the morning every weekend on the road trips home. But, any way you want.
A couple things I forgot to ask you about. One is from your time at Deep South, MVP.
Yes.
Your thoughts about him.
MVP, I think, is going to make for a great book or a great movie when he gets up there, because that's one guy that's came from, I guess, living the life of a thug to going to prison for 9 years, turning his life around, and becoming a star.
Yeah.
And me and him always got along at OVW. In fact, I'm sorry, Deep South. And he would come over here, and, you know, he always treated my kids with respect. He treated my house with respect. He treated my dogs with respect. He called me up one day, and he goes, hey, I just had a T-bone steak tonight, and I wanted to know if I could bring it over for your boxer.
He loved our boxers.
Yeah.
He wanted to have one. He wanted to take one.
But for somebody that dude just, I don't even realize, he's a class act, man. He's a class act. And for him to do what he's doing, I think he's doing a great job. He's always wanted to wrestle in Japan, and he's doing it. And because of his background, I think it was hard or expensive for WWE to take him. And he's always just, you know, he's watched Japanese film. He's always wanted to wrestle the Japanese style, and he's doing it, man. And we're actually, me and him are talking, and I want to set up a seminar for him to come in. He wants to come into the school and, you know, maybe do a few days of a seminar here and train some of the local guys, you know, around.
Nice.
Or guys out of state that want to come in. You know, if we get enough inquiries, we're going to do, you know, a two-day seminar.
He seemed like a guy, when he came into Deep South, that he already had
the character and did his character, whereas it seemed to me, I'm curious about your take on this, that a lot of guys who came into Deep South, it's sort of like there was this thing of breaking them down.
Yeah.
Breaking people down psychologically, but that didn't happen with him.
No, I would say after being in prison for so long, it'd be hard to break him down. But
I guess he had an advantage, huh?
Yeah, right? You know what I mean? He held up, man. And you know what? A lot of guys would ask me, too. They're like, has he ever seemed weird when you talk to him about, you know, his jail time? I'm like, I don't really talk to him about it, but when it's ever came up, he's always been honest with me. That's one guy that's never lied to me. You know what I mean? I've always respected him on that, and I've never lied to him. You know, we've always had this great respect for each other. And, you know, he's always, when we were invited backstage, he would pick us up and take us. You know, and he always pushes for us, no matter where he goes. But, yeah, he was one guy that he held his ground, and he when he believed he was right, he stuck to it. And he believed he was MVP 24/7.
Yeah.
That's why he was so good at it.
It came through. It came through that way.
Yeah, and I was just telling Micah that the same thing. It was hard to break, you know. I don't think Mike could have been broken down either. I mean, he was a Marine. It's kind of impossible to break Mike down.
Would you agree that some guys were broken down there?
I do.
I'll tell you right now, they're broken down. I watched them. Kenny Omega out of Canada. He's unreal talent.
Yeah.
Came in here, got broke down, didn't want to be there anymore, and quit.
Yeah.
Tommy Swade, a guy that couldn't miss, came in here and, you know, he was missing everything. It looked like he never wrestled before. Kevin Matthews came in for a tryout, outshined everybody, came back to Deep South, broken down, looked like he never wrestled a day in his life.
Hmm.
There was a ton of guys that broke down. But then there were some guys that got better. Jim and I came in here, looked like, you know, the only reason they got hired because they were jacked up twins left. I thought that we had great matches with them. Those guys were good talent.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a button.
Seems
Nick
like
Mitchell.
They were guys that that DeMott favored also, and at least that's the way it looked from the outside looking in.
The Gemini?
Yeah.
Not so much. You know what I mean? They were guys from Florida, and I think they lived down the street from one of the agents or something like that, but he never really pushed for them like he did Knox and Eichrich and those guys.
Okay.
But because they were obviously Deep South, Deep South didn't do what Deep South wanted. Deep South did what WWE asked him for. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So he helped them out tremendously because that's what the office wanted and that's what his job was and that's what, you know, obviously he wanted to do. So,
gotcha.
Yeah, you know, he did look out for them.
Hey, last thing before we run out of time here, I didn't really get to ask you about your time in Rampage when you were booking and doing the TV and so forth, and working with Doc Gayton. What your thoughts were on that period?
It was fun at first. I was having a good time down there, and I was learning to format TV and write TV, and you know, put guys in storylines and do this and that, and. They would actually call me on Sundays, and they'd be like, hey, that was one of the biggest days Johnny G's had on a Sunday. You know, thank you. You know, or congratulations. I'm like, oh, man, this is cool. And then they opened a school. They asked me if I wanted to be a trainer down there, Rampage School. And I'm like, yeah, absolutely. Then we made the Nielsen ratings, and, you know, everything was going good. And then I just think, I don't know where it went sour. I just Dr. Gayton or...
Well, what had happened is that there was a lot of the talent, you know, not they weren't happy with their spots or, you know, the storylines they were in, so they would go directly to Dr. Gayton and, you know, speak their piece and just, you know, they would tell him that, you know, this is not where I want to be, I want to, you know, do this or do this, and
mm-hmm.
so Dr. Gayton would, you know, naturally come back and, you know, tell Micah, you know, we need to change this, and let's do it like this, and so it almost felt like Mike didn't have, you know, any kind of say. He was there as a figure.
Kind of
it got to the point where he was just there. You know, it was like he was just there to tell people, okay, you're up.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I was in charge of a couple matches. Like, I was in charge of me and Murder One. I thought we had a great storyline going down there with Koontz and AJ Steele.
Oh, yeah, I love that with Koontz.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was awesome, and it was so fun, you know, to work those guys. And but that was something I had creative liberty with, freedom with, you know, with their opinion. And there were some other Kyle Matthews. I take credit for helping build Kyle Matthews up because I was putting him over and having good matches with the dude. And he just slowly took off from there, you know. I'm not taking all the credit, but I'm saying me and him had such great matches that I just think that it just kept building from there. And he was coming out of his shell and going. You know, and after that, I think he went to Japan and stuff like that. So I take not a lot of credit, but I like to think that I had a little bit with Kyle becoming where he is today in Georgia, you know, just by being in the matches with him, not doing his work for him, but just being in those matches and,
right,
and watching
right.
him grow.
Well,
Frankie Valentine.
Boy, he improved a lot. Wow.
Yeah.
Another guy. Who was running the stuff that you weren't running? Was that all Gaten or was...
It was mainly Crew always had a hand in it because he always helped with storylines and stuff like that. You know what I mean? But Crew, J-Rod, always, he was in the Doc's back pocket. Doc gave my surgery and stuff like that, so he was always going straight to the Doc. Guys were going straight to the Doc and asking for pay raises, and I had to smarten them up. I'm like, look, come through me first because it's not my budget. I'll ask for a raise for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And guys like Murder One who got raises because he deserved it. And, he came to me and asked me. He's like, hey, man, I'm driving this far, doing this and that. Murder One came in for almost nothing down there when he first came in. And then now I don't know. He's probably one of the top guys there. I think he is. He should be.
I would hope so.
Yeah. You know, so just guys like that. I've got a lot of respect for, you know, him and AJ and those guys. But those are the main ones. I think Crew and J-Rod are in the Doc tiers. You know, Crew does really good, though. Crew's a good talent and stuff like that. But I've never did much with Jimmy Rave. I think I had him work one or two shows with me when I was down there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, you know, how he's doing down there right now. I just hear bits and pieces of what's going on.
Well, that was another thing, you know, like I was saying earlier, is that if you have a school and you're able to go train, then you should. They didn't want any part of coming to training. You know, they had it. They didn't want any part of the school. They didn't want to be there to train. And I think that with a little bit of training, they could have been that much better, you know, because
yeah.
Crew, you know, had the body. The girls love him. And I just think he needed some tuning. I mean, he really...
Just fine-tuning, that's it.
Yeah. So,
he could go a long way if he put his mind to it.
I don't understand why people don't take advantage, you know, because Mike has a lot of knowledge, and I don't think people realize how much knowledge he does have, you know. And I like to think that I can teach the basics. And that's what I focus on. I just teach, you know, people how to lock up right and how to roll. And if I see something that I, you know, learned in my past, then I like to pass it on. But, I mean, people really should take advantage of trainers that have experience. And a lot of people don't, and I don't understand why.
Well, look, you guys, I really want to thank both of you for giving your time tonight to do the show. Really appreciate it. Very entertaining, very informative, I thought. And wish you both well in what's coming down the road for you. I guess you are getting folks can contact you through Facebook for training. And look for you. That's that McDonough show. That's going to be Heritage Park, either July 22nd or July 23rd, you believe?
So far. And, of course, I'll keep you updated on everything as soon as I lock it down.
Cool. And, of course, you can always check out both of these folks on Facebook to see where they're going to be in the near future. Again, thanks a lot for doing the show. Really appreciate it.
Thanks Larry. I appreciate you having us, man.
Thanks. Take care.
All right,
have a good night.
Bye-bye. Well, I don't know what happened to Mr. Van Dries, and Mr. Murder One never did show up, but we will be back next week. Our main guest will be Muhammad Ali Vaez from Ohio Valley Wrestling. We'll also have Grady Odom, the owner and operator of the Revived Georgia Championship Wrestling. For those old school fans, you may want to check out the interview Dave Wills did with Rotten Ron Starr on last Tuesday night show. It was a no holds barred thing, so it's probably worth listening to. And we will be back next Monday night at 8 p.m.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, the latest news on pro wrestling and MMA, and more. GWH thanks you for your support.